Can the bots get into position for a full climb? Five seconds to go. Game over.
Everybody clap your hands. Clap.
I'm watching a live stream of a competition in Huntsville, Alabama. And six robots in a confined pit, three blue, three red, have been chasing yellow cubes to pick them up, grab them, put them into their respective pens to score points. Meanwhile, there's an equivalent of a big metallic teeter-totter in the middle that serves as a scale, and the blue versus the red team works frantically to load as many yellow cubes on that scale to outweigh the other side to gain additional points. This is March Madness for robotics teams all over the country. And on this episode of Beyond My Day Job, we're going to talk with one of the mentors who's been doing this for well over a decade in New Mexico. And he's going to bring us firsthand into what it's like to start up a season, bring us to pre-game day, game day, and share with us the aha moments that these kids gain as a result of being on a robotics team from a standpoint of mechanical engineering, creative arts, electrical, technical, what have you. Stay with us for our next episode. We're going to talk to Rick Pierce on Beyond My Day Job. Rick Pierce.
Hello, Lonnie. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
Great.
How's New Mexico?
Beautiful sunny day here, like always.
Like always, unlike Michigan. Thank you. Which you no longer miss, I know. Left the rest of us in the sand or in the snow for you to join the sand.
Don't miss the rain, snow, slop, slush, none of that.
None of that. Excellent. Have you been watching any of the basketball games with March Madness upon us?
Well, I'm not a huge basketball fan by any means, but I did catch the NMSU game against Clemson last night and was not surprised to see NMSU fail, but they did a great job by making it to the March Madness.
And, okay.
You know, great accomplishment.
Right.
Football did even better this year, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I'll take it they're out, though. Excited. Yeah. I've been watching.
Yeah. NMSU is out for this year.
Got it. All right. Well, I know it's a busy part of the month, not because of basketball for you, which is why you were so kind to join Beyond My Day Job. You've got a different type of competition coming around the corner, if I'm not mistaken, around your robotics league, right?
That's correct. Yes, we will be going to competition the last weekend of March.
Okay.
We've been building robots here since the kind of first week of January or so.
Okay. Where are you going to have to travel to?
This year is our shortest trip ever. So we're going to compete in El Paso, Texas, which is just about 50 miles away from here.
Okay. All right.
In the past, we've traveled as far this way, Houston, to Phoenix, Denver, and Lubbock.
Lubbock. Okay. I was live streaming one of the competitions this morning. That was taking place in Houston. So
we had win our first year.
Okay. All right. Got it. Well, I want to jump into this because you've been doing this for, I mean, north of a decade, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of being involved with it. So for the benefit of our listeners, why don't you just kind of tell us what this is about? So when I say robotics league, why don't you clarify for everyone else?
Well, so I'll start way back at the beginning. So,
okay.
BattleBots was my first robotics competition, and that was, you know, individual, not as part of a team necessarily.
Yep.
That was back in 2001. So, and even before that, I had interest in robotics. But coming out of that, a few years later, 2003, actually, my older brother had contacted me and said, "Hey, there's a robotics competition, a team forming in your area. You should go help them." And he had been helping the same organization, mentoring my nephew, his son.
Okay.
For about 3 years at that point, I think. So a series of coincidences. My wife happened to be a visiting social worker at that school.
Okay.
She found a point of contact, said, yep, here's the name, gave him a call, and they said, wow, somebody called and volunteered to be a mentor for our team. What kind of nut is this, really? And it's been continuous since then.
Okay.
So far, we're at, I think this is our 27th competition that we've been involved with. Not always as a competitor, sometimes as a sponsor.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Just for everyone's benefit, just while we always talk about our hobbies, our high effort hobbies, but tell me what you generally have been involved with that kind of got you in this community of robotics with, it's with high school students, I know, but
yeah.
What got you into that? What's been your background that even made this really, useful for your hobby interests?
Yeah. So I mean, growing up, I was a tinkerer, took apart most toys that I ever received, built cool stuff with erector sets, et cetera, growing up. Interested in robotics when they started becoming popular, more commonplace in the workforce, or high school years in the 80s. So ended up going when I was in college for a mechanical engineering degree.
Okay.
Did a couple of robotics classes then. The only way I could afford college is I went through ROTC. So I spent the next few years in the Army on active duty, about 9 years, and then worked for the Army as a civilian now. But so I've been a frustrated mechanical engineer kind of for quite a while. Yeah. So I didn't have an ability to own my own tools to build what I wanted until I became a civilian. And also, that really wasn't what I was doing for any of my work.
A
great outlet for me,
right,
use it as an excuse to start acquiring my tools, build cool stuff and get to help kids and mentor them along the way too. Is a pretty great experience.
It's often I talk to my friends who are into major hands-on hobbies, and the theme of get more tools always comes up.
So when I was in the Army, I did acquire some tools on the way, primary woodworking tools, and that's the stuff that's a little more accessible anywhere. And when we got into this hobby, then it became, welders, milling machine, lathes. So
okay.
Goes on and on.
All right. So
good to have a mentor friend to compete with too, who has the most tools. So.
Right. Yeah. So you're not only beating the other robots, you're beating the others with their, their tool stash. So tell us about the kids and the actual participants who you're really mentoring. So Give us a day in their life. What's going on with those kids?
So most of the team that I mentor directly is a high school robotics team.
Okay.
Typically, our team has about 20 to 30 students participating. I'll talk a little bit more about the history, how the team got started, I guess, later. But currently, we do a district-wide team, so anybody in high school throughout the entire Las Cruces school district is welcome to come join our team. I'm not sure what the split is. We actually build at one of the early college high school in town, which is obviously a college prep school.
Okay.
Majority of our students are from that school. And mostly interested in science and technology, but some of them are just participating because there's other business aspects they can use. It's a fun competition, and they've been there for several years. So
okay, all right. So, but there is a defined team, right, that you come around and support for this season, correct?
You're right. Yeah, there's a defined team, and Gets a little complicated to explain. So we the first is our big competition of the year. And the first stands for inspiration and recognition of science and technology.
Yep.
It was founded back in 1992 officially by Dean Kamen. Anybody's listened to his name, familiar with his name, he is the creator of the Segway.
Also, right.
And also holds a bunch of medical patents and honorary degrees. From what I understand, he never actually earned his own college degrees. He just has honorary degrees.
Okay.
And another MIT professor, Woody Flowers, are the two founders that started this in 92. So it's been growing ever since. You know, started back there as a small competition on MIT. Now, I believe there's about 7,000 teams competing. They will be competing this year across 25 countries.
It's international.
It's international.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's 25 countries, and right now the regional and district events are going on. There's about 109 separate regional events, you know, that are getting prepped to decide who gets to go to the finals.
Okay. So that's what was airing this morning with the live streams, the regional.
Right. So you were watching a couple of the regional events.
Yes, I saw. Yeah, Houston and parts of Pennsylvania. I saw Boston had one going. There was one in Illinois. So those that were on. There were some that were getting ready to air later in California. Okay, all right. So you mentioned you've been doing this for about 15 years, right? As a mentor. Okay.
Yes.
With the teams that you've had, you know, tell us about your team this year or some of the, you know, teams that you've had. And I'm curious about how you guys get an identity, you know, what's your team name and, you know, what are some of the dynamics that you run into?
So, kind of start from the beginning. Our team began in due to one student at a high school, Michael, or was our first student. He conned his, chemistry and I believe the other one was an English teacher. I'm not positive what they conned them into sponsoring being the sponsors for their robotics team and agreed to take us to competition. So he, you know, first team was about 10, 12 folks, his buddies, his friends. We built in his dad's shop. His dad is still a mentor on the team with us, even though his son has been out of the program for 13 years or 11 years or so.
Okay. You build robots, can't do math in your head.
that's about it. So he conned us in, got us thing, our program started. He's went on and now owns his own business. So
okay.
First was probably some help in getting him to where he is today.
It's great.
As a matter of fact, we had to call him in last night with some of his technical equipment to do some debugging on our robot last night. So he's still still a mentor when he's available.
Right.
But since then, you know, our team's grown. The team name we created that time we came up with Project Neo.
Okay.
It was based on the Matrix movies.
Oh, yes.
Just named it randomly after something that the kids thought was cool. A few years later, you know, after the Matrix third one or whichever one came out, kind of lost popularity. And so we kind of just redefined our name, kept our identity, but created the acronym New Engineering Opportunities.
Got it.
For the Neo now. So
got it.
That worked pretty well to carry on the lineage and kind of get away from. In fact, I'm wearing one of our old robot team's shirts here that has a spoon tied in the knot. It says, you know, there is no spoon.
Oh, yes. Yep. From the Matrix. That's great.
Yeah. We also named some of the robots after after characters from the movies for the first few years, too.
Okay.
But, so from there, you know, our team's grown. Grows and shrinks. Probably biggest team, maybe about 40 people, 40, maybe up to 50 total.
Okay.
Down to, you know, some of the leaner years, you've done to about 20. but kept interest throughout the community. Keeps, you know, it kind of grows and swells. Experience level grows and swells with that. And, you know, there's peaks where the mentors don't do a whole lot of work at all. And we just look to the older students and have them mentoring the younger ones. And we can relax and talk about our day.
Right.
that's when we hit the peaks. And then other years, we're kind of working pretty hard to keep everyone on track, keep them focused, think about the schedule, and then help lead them to, you know, how to build, how to solve their problems as they come up. So we've always worked hard to ensure the students are the ones, you know, not only building the robot, designing the robot, but running the program themselves. Let them have as much rein on the schedule, the process, the design, you know, all the components, as much as possible anyways.
So for you personally, how hands-on are you?
I'm pretty hands-on because I can't hold myself back sometimes. I try, but it's hard for me to do this, but, you know, got to let them do the work and let them work through the answer. So sometimes it's very, you know, you have the concept in your mind, you think it'll work. You got to convince them that that's a concept worth trying, and then help them try to, you know, implement it. And I've always focused more on the mechanical side. I did some programming in the early years, but, you know, this is the robot is just the vehicle to support, generating the interest in science and technology.
Right. Yeah, amazing.
Could be anything else, but, you know, this brings in tight schedules. How do you manage people, time, places? Plus, you got mechanical parts, you got electrical parts. We use a lot of pneumatic components.
Okay.
And then also software. Each of the robots have 50, each match is 15 seconds autonomous mode, and then a 2.5 minute of, actually 2 minutes and 15 seconds of teleop mode, where they're actually controlling the robot with a joystick.
Now, I'm going to ask this at risk of alienating some of the listeners, but because I'm in the software industry, I'm really intrigued. What are you guys coding in for your programming language?
So it's currently this year we've using Java.
Okay.
We've used C and C++ in the past. We've used LabVIEW. Going back to the early days, there was a program called PBASIC, which was from a company called Parallax.
Okay.
You know, for a microcontroller level. The computers have evolved. So essentially that first couple of years was basically the old 8088 microprocessor that was, you know, 15 years old at that time, very, very little capacity. Now we're using, I'm not going to go into specs because I don't know them.
Sure.
It's called a Robo Rio, but it's a purpose built robot control system computer. That's much more complex than what we do back in the day.
You know, it's almost like the cars now. Cars have got more line of code on them than a jet fighter.
A little bit of, you know, complexity that I get to talk about is back in when we started, we used no sensors on the robot. Any autonomous mode was dead reckoning. Run forward for, you know, 30 seconds or 100 times through this do loop and stop. Now
hard-coded.
Hard-coded, you know, you could have options, go left, go right. You selected before the start of the match, and it would just do it once they turn on the field. We're using sensors on the wheels, any of the arm components, all that is monitored and controlled. The driver can see the feedback on those. We're using gyroscopes and NavX boards to help determine the controls. They've built in PID controllers. It's proportional integrating differential controllers.
Okay.
That's kind of the best easy example is the same technology keeps your car working on cruise control.
Got
it. Use that logic when you command your arm to move to a certain point and you want it to hold there.
Okay.
Yeah, it'll move it and hold it and monitor position and correct as required.
Got it. That makes sense.
You know, with the sensors, when you want to, you know, tell the robot to make a 90-degree turn, it can actually measure that and stop it when it's appropriate, as opposed to old days, we just guessed, you know, figured out if we ran it for about 2.5 seconds.
You should be 90 degrees.
You slip on the carpet, well, you went some other direction. You know?
Right. So. Gyroscope is a little more accurate now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Do you have any team mottos or slogans or philosophies?
So, the strict weight limits, size limits on this in this sport are... have to be met, and we've had to do some surgery on robots at the competition to make weight in the past.
Okay.
Or, you know, even the last few days of the build season, we realized, oh no, how do you take 100-pound robots and take 10-pound, you know, 130-pound robot and get it down to 120 competition weight? And so we've adopted a, if there's room for a hole, you're not done with the part yet. So as soon as we get it pretty close to done, if you can trim away any extra weight, we'll do that.
If there's room for a hole, you're not done yet.
Yeah. Now, some of that's changed over the last few years. I'll say that the technologies in here has grown, and the industry around the competition has grown. So there's some dedicated companies now that are making transmissions that we use in these robots. They're a lot more choices on what motors we use and stuff. So we are able to build a lighter robot much easier than we could when we started doing this.
Okay. So, that makes sense.
The way they could kind of level set the first competition, it's common across some of the other competitions we've done also, is they manage the, you got to use the same computer. You got to use the same battery. In the motors that are available for use, there's a limited set and limited quantities that you can use. So that keeps the teams mostly on the same scale.
Oh, you mean when you say same, meaning across all the teams,
across
individual
all the teams,
robots.
Yep. So they, you don't have one team using the, you know, 88 microprocessor still, and
right,
one using
okay.
this new robot Rio controller.
Got
it. Have somebody with one 12-volt battery and another one with, you know, four lithium battery power packs running at, you know, 84 volts or something.
Makes sense. Okay.
So that helps level set the field and keeps the competition, you know, more even. I'll say there's a lot of difference in resources for the teams and what they have available within the community to help them in terms of dollars or sponsorships and, you know, for instance, some of the teams sponsored by some of the more automotive industries, I guess, up in your area.
Yep, yep.
They have access to huge CNC machines. And,
okay.
Et cetera. You're like, hey, we've designed a part. Can you help us make it? Well, sure. We'll talk
right.
to the machine tomorrow, and you have it tomorrow night. And then there's and our team somewhere in the middle, but there's a lot of teams that are still – you know, building in somebody's garage, and especially the rookie teams. That's one thing that's always interesting at the competition that our team has always tried to help with and get them. There's typically a team or two that shows up with some kind of robot chassis put together, the motors kind of sort of mounted on there. You know, it's almost a box of parts, honestly. Multiple times we've been able to, you know, get them going, help them out, and get something on the field for it.
Oh, how nice. Okay. All right.
Get them in the competition. We've had some years where those teams have actually ended up higher ranking than us.
the team you helped.
The team we helped. Yeah, I mean, it's happened more than once where, wait a minute, how are they ranked number, you know, 18 and we're 24?
Right.
Actually, I should mention, at these regional events, there's typically about 45 to 50 teams competing.
Okay.
As you saw this morning, looking at some of those regional events, they try to make it as, you know, exciting and entertaining as a sporting event. And that's one of the goals of FIRST, is get that interest in science and technology by, you know, making it interesting, making it as popular and fun to be at as a sporting event. So
It's not just the learning, but you are competing, but it's also very, you know, collaborative, it sounds like.
Well, it's a collaborative environment. Everybody try to, you know, FIRST uses the phrase cooperation.
Okay.
And gracious professionalism. So,
no, I like that.
Especially when you're in the pit, you know, you're helping out your partners, your other teams. You know, if somebody needs a part, everybody's looking for, see if they have a spare.
Got it.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, and then even on the field, you know, with the gracious professional, I guess you're, the goal is not to destroy the other team.
So I wanted to talk about that. Okay. Yeah. So, cause you said battle bots when you, your first entry into this. So, so you're not out trashing all of this technology in the field, right?
No. So it, the game event is, typically, well, it's typically, at least recently years, it's a three-on-three sporting event kind of competition. It's ranged in things from picking up and throwing frisbees, you know, throwing things as big as like the 30, 40-inch yoga balls.
Okay.
There's been a basketball kind of game, a couple games where you had to pick up big, you know, the large-size plastic totes and move them and stack them.
Yeah.
So every year they do the simulcasts in January and say, here's the game for this year. And that's simulcast. So no matter where in the world you're at, you get the rules at the same time.
Got it.
And they've also already published the, rules for the season, but they're locked. So at the end of the introduction, they, publish the code to unlock the documents. And you can begin planning your robot at that point.
Okay. Okay. And,
so, excuse me.
So they synchronize it.
Synchronize the start point for everybody. The you can start deciphering the rules from that moment on in terms of, you know, how what size your robot has to be every year. Generally, the dimensions are about a 30 by 30 inch base and less than 5 foot tall. And about 120 pounds, but every year they're a little different. They've changed it a couple times during the match. After that's the starting configuration. During the match, quite often you can expand to be much larger. But so you can't plan ahead too much at all. We're pretty much a year round team now, so we do some off season work, but you can't really start building anything to help you in the next season until you know the rules. And okay. We'll spend at least probably the first week out of a 6-week competition to define the requirements, figure out, you know, which of the users, typically several methods to score. You have to figure out which you're going to try to complete all the tasks and be able to score each way, maybe pick a couple.
Oh, I see. Better. Your scoring strategy.
As I said, it's usually a 3-on-3 event. So you're going to depend on your partners to do, you know, maybe they do one thing good and you can do another.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. The interesting thing about the way this set up is you don't know who your partners are. So seating matches are all randomly paired. We go in, they lay out probably at an event, we probably get 4 or 5 practice matches, but then this actual seating matches probably do about 10 to 12 of those over about a day and a half period. So they're coming pretty quick in between matches, you know, usually half hour to 45 minutes, you'll be back out on the field. And during that time, you'll look at who's your next match, who's your opponents in the next match, and who's your two alliance partners.
So what's an alliance partner?
Okay. So you're, during the seeding matches, they define the alliance partners. So it'd be two other robotics team plus yours makes up your alliance.
Got it. Okay.
If you notice in the match, they use a red and a blue alliance. By changing out the bumpers on your robot, it helps you keep track of who's who.
Okay.
But so the bumper, you know, are red and blue. Yep, you have to build two sets of those.
I saw that. All right.
And so you meet up with your, you know, teammate, your new alliance partners, figure out your strategy and your strategy based on who you're actually competing against. Go out, do your 2.5 minute match on the field. And then basically go back and start that whole process over again real quick because you're going to be back out in the field. Meanwhile, part of your team's in the pit trying to repair any damage, swap out the battery, you know, check for any damages. Kind of, you always have to look for, you know, loose nuts and bolts and stuff that just loosen up and stuff, the belts right. that slip, chain tensioners, etc. So it's pretty fast and serious in the pit. You mentioned bumpers. When we first started this, bumpers didn't exist. And that really made the game exciting.
So a bumper is literally a protective, you know, shield, if you will, around the lower part.
But around the lower part of the robot, you have basically a 3/4-inch board with the pool noodles on top of it. So you get about a, you end up with about a 3-inch wide padded bumper around the bottom of your robot that prevents a lot of damage. Days, we would, you know, literally cave in the aluminum chassis and be out there, you know, with hammers straighten it back out, which, you know, made it pretty darn exciting.
Right. Yeah, I kind of missed that, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of exciting and fun. Now, the bumpers reduce a lot of the damage, but they're still, you know, a lot of these designs have long arms that stick out in front, back sides. You sometimes get knocked over. Well, the intent is not to, you know, beat up and knock out your opponent. It's
right.
There is vigorous interaction.
I saw.
And, you know, there's rules about you know, you can't pin them for more than 5 seconds. I think you know, you can't intentionally attack them. And some areas you can't touch them at all.
Okay.
Like they're trying to line up and score at you know, some of the areas this year. If you touch them, that's a foul on you. So
got it. Wow. Let me ask, for all the years you've been doing this, tell me one thing you dislike and one thing you like the most about being involved.
So I talked some about two dislikes already, I guess. You know, sometimes that the resources available to some of the teams causes you know, some disproportionate designs of robots, etc. Not so much the design, but the capabilities that they're able to build. Some of the teams are just by location. Teams in the Michigan area, in particular, Michigan is a hotbed for FIRST. If you don't know,
it is
very, very popular in all the schools up there. They have district events up there, which are somewhat smaller than a regional event, but that allows them to go to multiple events.
Got it.
So a lot of teams are capable of going to 2 or 3 competitions, but 2 or 3 are the regional events. And each one, you know, you spend a weekend on the battlefield. Come out of there, you know, everything's debugged, everything's fixed. You go to the next competition, you're that much better. As opposed, you know, part of it for geographic for us, we're stuck in the middle of the desert here, and it's a trip to go anywhere. our mentors are not capable of taking off, you know, multiple days off work for weeks in a row to go do this competition. But
got it.
You know, but that's just life is life, and nobody promises it's fair.
Right.
I kind of regret you know, the bumpers being on there, that you know, to take away some part of the urgency and repairs, thrills of competition.
Because
I'm just as happy in the pit as I am setting up on the watching the matches. So, but a lot of times I've missed seeing our team compete because I've been, you know, helping somebody else's team. You know,
wow, that's really admirable, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, that's been our team's attitude. We've always done that. So one of the highlights I'll talk about, one of our former students, he kind of started early. He was a couple years younger than he was supposed to be officially on the team, but his older brother is on the team. His parents were mentors. But he became our coder. Especially he was not only a couple years younger, but he was small for his age.
Okay.
So they had teams coming around. Hey, we heard you got your autonomous mode running. Can you help us with our code? just a minute. Let me get Ian here when he's got a free minute, and then come over to the other mentors on the team, bringing 12-year-old kid that's about not even 4 foot tall, and he'd just a minute, sit down, fix their code. All right, thanks.
That is great. Oh, that's great.
Things I like, you get to see the kids from quite often, from at least freshman year, sometimes earlier, up through senior or sometimes senior plus, because we got quite a few of them that have stayed around and done some mentoring.
Okay.
Some are doing a lot of mentoring still that are still in the area. You get to see them go from, I don't know how to hold a screwdriver to designing, building parts and running, machine tools. Some of their graduates are still in college. They're building, designing satellites now that are going to be launched here soon.
You got
kids that are running their own business. Some that have went off to, several that have went off to MIT, Harvard, WPI. They're, going off to big name schools coming out of here. Part of that is first. A lot of it's just who they are to begin with. I'm not going to claim, credit for that.
But seeing that, right? I mean, just being knowing you had some possible influence with that type of academic, launch. That's really great to hear. That's inspiring.
Like I said, we lead them to possible solutions that they get to try. And you get to, you start with they'll ask, well, how do we do this? Or first, usually they ask, can we do this? And we say, I don't know. What does the rule say? And then they go look at the rules and ask their friends, figure out, yes, that's legal or not. Okay. And okay, now if you're going to do it, how do you do it? For some period of dropping hints and getting them one step closer, when you see that light bulb come on and they finally, I know why we're doing that or why we can't do it that way. That's pretty cool to see.
Let's come down a level. Give us a real micro example of something really complex that the kids designed that was really surprising to you. Can you think of anything that was just like, wow, they pulled this off? I can't believe it.
Well, there's been lots of those, and some of the small ones are just as hard as the bigger things. This year, our robot has to be able to pick up basically their milk crates covered with a nylon cover. We have to pick those up and lift them up onto platforms that are up to 6 feet in the air.
Okay. All right.
You got some low scoring areas, you got some high scoring areas, but the highest one is up 6 feet high. And the hard limitation on that is the robot cannot extend beyond the frame of the perimeter by more than 16 inches at any time.
The perimeter of what?
The perimeter of the base of the robot. So you can't stick out more than 16 inches in front, back, sideways from the robot this year. We've been able to stick out, 10 feet, but
right. Okay.
And we've built, the obvious solution to this is what picks up boxes and stacks them up high is something like a forklift. Mm-hmm. And we've built several forklifts over the years, varying levels of success. Wanted to do something different. Some of the mentors are opposed to forklifts because they're complicated. So they wanted to do a swing arm, just basically an arm, pick it up on the floor, lift it up. Well,
Got it.
Fit within that parameter, we needed something that's a provides a, you know, a near vertical lift. You can't go swing way out. You have to go almost straight up and down.
Okay.
So one way to do that is a you can design a 4-bar linkage to do that. For any engineers out there, break out your kinematics books from college. But basically, you start by sketching where you think the arm should be in a low position, and where do you want it when it's up at the high position. And by doing some graphical solutions is the easiest way for me to solve them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, there's a train coming through here.
No worries. It's kind of charming. Maybe it's delivering parts.
All right. If he stops blowing the horn, I think we'll be okay. So you define the lower position, the higher position, do some graphical solution on that, and come up with an approximate design, and we could show that just on paper that, yeah, that looks about right. But from there, you know, once the kids understood how, you know, what I was drawing for them, how that was going to work, and how you could figure out if it could actually stay within all the requirements and rules on size, et cetera. They were able to take what was a pencil drawn design in 10 minutes on a piece of paper, draw it up in CAD, and then began tweaking the design. You know, what if I move this arm, this connection point up a little? What if I lengthen this arm a little bit to help refine it and get it much closer to where they it would work? And then they actually built a prototype of that, you know, kind of a rough, some aluminum tubes, some bolts through it, and manually raise it up and down until you're like, does that work? Does that work? You know, what's wrong? Tweak the points until they come up with, you know, what we end up with is an arm that works surprisingly well. The key point is it only takes, you know, one motor to control the movement of all of the three bars that are actually moving on the robot. And get that vertical motion they were after.
Got it. While staying within that perimeter range.
Yeah, right. And then also this year, we've got transmissions that are actually have a power takeoff drive like you might have on a tractor.
Okay.
So you know, using the same motors going through the same transmission, you can start powering a separate shaft. We use that for the winch part that actually at the end of the game, if you can hook onto a bar and lift your robot off the ground, you get additional points for that. So the arm, what arm was designed to deliver a hook to that other bar. And basically we use a winch mechanism to lift from there. The transmissions, they're specifically designed to have that power takeoff capability, which is really handy. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't stop the wheels from driving. So when you're trying to winch, it would be driving at the same time. And we decided that we want to disable that feature. So they were able to come up with by looking at the design of the transmission, figuring out how it works. They designed and printed a 3D part that swings into and blocks part of the transmission mechanism and keeps it into a neutral position.
Got it.
So now you have a separate servo that we call it a neutralizer, high tech name.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's functionally named.
Yeah, so it pushes the neutralizer, electrical servo pushes the neutralizer into position, forces a neutral. But to make that work, then they had to, you know, work with the programming team and have them get the right sequence down. So basically, they have to shift the transmissions into high, push the neutralizers into place, then try to shift into low, and that blocks it. So they, that's a routine now. One mouse button that turns on the PTO also makes sure the transmissions are all configured at the same time.
Got it. Folks, you got to be geeking out on this stuff. You got to be totally seeing what's going on here. This is great.
So yeah, this is some really high-tech stuff. It's really cool to see the kids do it, and they put on the competitions like you know, major sporting events, music playing all throughout. So, you know, for sure, I'd encourage anybody that's thinks this sounds cool at all to, you know, go out on the first website. It's firstinspires.org.
Okay, firstinspires.org. Yeah.
And it's a little complicated, but if you look under the first robotics section, FRC, you can find a competition, and there's a good chance there's one somewhere in your area you could probably go see this weekend or next weekend.
Okay, all right. Yeah, literally. Well, speaking of that, so let's switch gears, no pun intended, from technical to day of competition. Sure. So where do you have to go this year again, you said, for your regional?
So we're going down to El Paso, Texas.
El Paso, okay, about 50 miles from you. All right, so bring us to day before, day of.
Yeah, so the competition overall is a three-day competition. So it starts on a Thursday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so picture 46 teams of people trying to get in the same building at the same time. Teams range in size from 10 or 15 students up to 50 to 80 students.
Okay.
Going into the pits area, they limit access initially just because otherwise you couldn't function. Yep. So you get to bring in one mentor and three or four students initially. You can wheel in your toolboxes, get them to your pit, your toolboxes and your robots, get them into your pit area and start getting ready for the competition. So
all right.
You got some folks just trying to get the pit organized and set up. So they give you an area about 10 foot by 10 foot square. Pretty small, gets really cramped. And you know, through the hallways between all these little subdivided up cubicle areas are, you know, there's robots, there's toolbox going by. Typically the events folks are still wheeling some stuff around trying to get set up on all day Thursday. So it's a organized chaos is the best it could be.
Are the kids usually stressed at this point?
You know, they're not. There's always a few that are, you know, usually the probably the key leader positions are a little more stressed that, oh, we got to get this in and we got to get it going. Most of the rest are, you know, hey, we're going to competition and this is cool. They know they have tasks to do, but
right.
It's not that stressful for them, I think.
All right. Okay.
So you're trying to get your robot. One thing they enacted a few years ago, and this is how we're still driving our robot around and still perfecting the design. I don't know if I made that clear earlier. So from the kickoff till the end of the build season is 6 weeks long.
So that kickoff is in January.
Right. So mid-February is the February 21st or something this year. I think it was 22nd was the end of the build season, at which point you have to seal your robot in a plastic bag with a number, with a number tag on it, seal it up. And you can't touch that part until you get to competition.
Wow.
So a few years ago, they enacted a rule that said, well, you can take 30 pounds of your robot and keep working on it. And so this year, what we did is we built another chassis and we took the arm off of the, off the robot. That's our 30 pound weight limit, and bolted that arm on there and continued to build and develop our arm and refine all
that.
Got
it.
Get the sensors on it right. Get them working right, et cetera. Get the programming right, because programmers never get any real time on the real robot until some point very late in the season. And this is
clever.
You know, all within the rules and legal.
It's
one of those things that newer teams probably wouldn't have the resources to do unless they really have some good sponsorship and funding, even to buy, you know, two sets of transmissions and two computers and extra batteries and, you know, all that. You know, some of that is we've accumulated over the years too.
Right. Yeah. Your veteran status gives you some benefits.
Well, we have rooms dedicated to spare parts, and we have also got last year's robot and the year before's, and some of those are still useful for prototyping or attaching things to or practice programming on at the same time. So,
Okay. All right. Yeah, you know, clever. Yeah.
We always try to keep one robot running for demonstrations always. So we always have last year's work in, you know, in pretty good shape still.
Okay.
But so day one, we get the pit set up. We get the robot over to the inspection center team, and they got going through in detail. Did you use the right size motor for this amp circuit? Do you got the air compressor set right so that the safety is all made? Is there any sharp points that are going to cut people? Got to take care of those. Check your weight, check your size limits. And quite often, you have to go back and adjust something. I'd say you almost always have to. You rarely ever make it all the way through everything without, you know, something, you know, minimal is like, yeah, there's a couple sharp points there, you know, go cover those or file them down, make them smooth so we're not getting cut or scraped.
Right, right.
And I believe late on Thursday, on Thursday they'll have some practice matches going. So if you made it through at least the base level of inspection, you don't have to have a final okay. But if you're safe enough that nobody's going to get seriously injured by it, then you go out in the field and hit a practice round or two. And that's pretty much day one. It's just all getting set up in some practice rounds. Day two, you start your seeding matches, like I've talked earlier about.
Right. Yep.
So this is your random pairing with two other teams, probably between Friday and Saturday morning. You get 10 to 12 seeding matches.
Okay.
You know, and all the while, especially early on, you're working out bugs on every match.
And each match is about 2.5 minutes. You said.
Right. 2.5 minutes.
Okay. So, all right.
It goes really quick. And you try to catch. Hey, you know, autonomous mode, it didn't go quite straight when it was supposed to go straight. You know, what happened?
Right.
You know, during the competition, we tried to hook the bar and our hook disconnected too early. So how do we fix that? And, you know, there's always something to tweak.
Yeah, refine. Okay.
So that goes, you know, through the day. Friday and Saturday, also Friday through Saturday at noontime or so. All the while, there is, and I almost missed this, the judges are coming through. Then they're talking to the folks in the pit, tell us about your robot, tell us about your team. There's specific judges for specific areas. So there's the, you know, some that are focused on the how the team operates. Some are, you know, how the robot works. Specifically, Underwriters Laboratory does the safety for all of this. So they have their inspectors come through and talk to you about safety and what do your team do to keep yourself straight, you know, keep yourself safe, check to make sure you have a battery spill kit and a fire extinguisher, that your working area is clean. They're also looking for different judges, you know, just your team spirit and whether you're living up to the cooperation and gracious professionalism. So there are several awards that you can win for other things than just the robot on the floor.
Got it. I didn't realize that.
And I say one thing that we hadn't talked about is there's a chairman's award. That is the top award for a regional event. And that has almost nothing to do with your robot at all. So it's about your community outreach, how you're spending, you know, spreading science and technology throughout your community. And, you know, communicating your ideals to, you know, the community and stuff. We make a lot of progress trying to work towards that award. Sometimes when you hear the teams that actually win it, you're like, there's no way, but we keep trying.
Right.
In particular, a couple of years ago, there was a team that had sponsored distance educations to several schools in Mexico through like an online TV channel teaching classes for them. Really?
Wow. Oh, wow.
That's pretty impressive stuff, you know?
Yeah. All right.
So what we've done, we do sponsor a Lego League competition for younger kids, basically, I think it's 8 to 14-year-olds.
Okay.
Something in that neighborhood, anyways, where they do a similar type competition, but they just use smaller robots built out of Legos on a 4 foot by 8 foot playing field, as opposed to our field is basically the size of a basketball arena. So
it's that, wow, it's that big. Okay. Yeah. The aerial view that I watched on the live cast this morning, I couldn't get an appreciation for the dimensions.
So I believe it's the same size as a basketball court, 27 foot wide by 57 foot long.
Okay.
So, we've put on that event, and we've had done that for the last 4 years, I believe, with 40 teams of 10 students going through that each year. So about 400 students per year compete in that competition, where they do a robot competition, they do a project, and then they do a thing called a challenge where they don't know what they're going to do until they get into the room, and they just get assigned a task and have to show cooperation and leadership and figure out how to accomplish the task. So we try for the Chamberlain's Award. It's a very hard goal, but that is actually the highest award. Winning that will get you to the finals. The only other way to get there is by winning the actual competition on the floor.
Okay. All right. With the bots.
And that's your second level award. and our team has never made it. We've been close. We've went after our rookie year. We were second place. I think it was maybe our best finish ever. We've been close several times. Just haven't been able to actually win that final match, you know?
It sounds so really well-rounded, and they're motivating not just the, the science and technology, but just the, behavioral and the community part. I like that. It's got both sides of the, how they're going to interact with people. So, can I ask you, Rick? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to jump back to just finish up the competition description.
There. Yes.
So so Friday, that pretty much carries us up till Saturday afternoon, and right after lunch, they bring the top 8 seeded team captains out on the arena floor. So they get based on their 12 or so seeding matches, these are teams that are ranked the best out of the 46 or so. This is where they get to pick their alliance partners to go into the finals. And they get teams, right? So they get to pick from any of the teams out there who gets to be, their partners going in the finals. And they do it. What is interesting is team one, the number one seeded team, quite often, typically, says, I'd like the second seeded team to be my partner.
Okay.
And they, so everybody moves up one step then.
So, got it. Got it.
And, now what was the third seeded team? Dell picks what was the fourth seeded team, and they become partners. So really, if you're top 12 or so teams, there's potential that you're going to be a team captain.
Okay.
And then you get to pick, eventually you ends up with 24 teams that go into the final competitions. And then it's just a normal quarterfinal type tree structure, just like it's going on with March Madness here.
Play bracket.
Build your tree and see who's going to win. First does play 2 out of 3, best out of three competitions in the final. So you get at each step you get at least 2 attempts. If you 2 or possibly 3 if you manage to you'll end up with a tie going into those. So that's where you really see the best performing robots on the field, the ones that are having problems and don't make it to that level typically.
But you've got to be.
But even at those, there's always upsets. I mentioned the first rookie year, our alliance partner. I don't remember exactly what happened, but basically the robot got stuck in the middle, and they spent most of the match sitting at the edge of the field, kind of wiggling around. And we lost by only a few points. So, you know, if they would have been able to even just to get in the other team's way, some, you know, slow them down, it would have probably made a difference. But, you know, it happens. You know, we've been there about before. We're one of the other years where we had to climb. We hooked our rope, climbed the winch, and the circuit breaker blew. And, you know, we're gradually falling to the ground as the time runs out. And, you know, once you touch the ground, that's it, you know.
Yeah, you can't do anything.
The circuit breaker would have applied enough power through braking that it would have stopped us. But that blew.
Right.
And we just watch it, you know, you're up there, you know, 3 seconds to spare, and the last 3 seconds it just starts going down. You're like, oh, well, you know, that's it.
It was a good run.
I'm sorry, I kind of interrupted you. You were going to ask me something.
Oh, no, you were talking about just the different awards and recognition. So with you having mentored, anything that you or your peers on the teams have you guys received? I don't know if they recognize different mentoring skills individual helpers.
Yeah, so there is. And one of the things about FIRST is, you know, there's the mentors that work with the team like I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, there's volunteers that are the judges, the field setup, just helping out at the game events, helping out throughout the season to get the entire event to happen. So they do an award for, you know, volunteer of the year, at least at every regional.
Okay.
So the folks that are doing that side of the work, kind of more, I guess, the operation side, keeping the event running. But for the mentors, there's a award called the Woody Flowers Award,
which you mentioned one of the two.
Right. He was one of founders, the founders, one of the founders.
Okay.
He's I'll talk about our high school days here just a little bit, Lenny. Woody Flowers.
we won't.
Woody Flowers is a similar personality, I believe, to Mr. Hesse.
I'm right with you, and we'll have another episode to explain the Hess.
Yeah, so somewhat of an old hippie still, and is you know, definitely a key component of this game still.
Okay.
Yeah, but so the award is named after him. In 2004, when we went to Denver, the students nominated me as their mentor that best inspires, you know, engineering concepts and leadership.
Okay.
And they selected me as a winner. So.
And you were still focused on the mechanical aspects and things you do today?
Yeah, it's primarily mechanical spot. It's about it.
All right.
So,
to
have a group of students pick you as, you know, somebody for that level of respect.
Absolutely.
A lot. You compete against, you know, 40 teams, a couple mentors each, 4 or 5 mentors each.
Right.
That's a big honor.
Absolutely. Wow. So, yeah, that was 2004. That's a great. Well, see, there's some of your pent up engineering.
Yeah.
Get to fruition. That's wonderful.
Side note I want to put out there about Woody Flowers this year. You know, kids' use of technology, I guess I'll throw that in there. They wanted to name our robot Woodrow Flora this year. I don't know exactly how they came up with that concept. Okay. That's where they ended up. Me and another mentor here kind of went, you know, not sure if that'll be seen as funny or cute or whether it might be disrespectful. Maybe you ought to pick something else.
Right.
And one of the students goes, well, I'll just ask Woody. I bet he has a Twitter account. Puts him up on Twitter, shoots him a note. Woody comes back. I'd be honored if you named your robot Woodrow Flora.
Oh, you know? That's great. That is great, Rick. That was for this year. This year's robot.
This year. So we do have a printout of that framed in our building room, our shop area right now.
Right. That was his reply.
Yeah, so we'll make sure that's hanging in our pit down here in El Paso, too. Because it's one of those, you do want to make sure that everybody knows that we check that and it's not disrespectful.
Right, got it. Okay, plus, you know, it doesn't hurt to You got touched by one of the founders. That's pretty neat. Yeah. I know we're almost wrapping up on time. Let me ask you, two last questions. Okay. We've talked a lot about science and technology, so I want your advice, being a mentor with, you know, the whole STEM programs that are across the nation, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. What's one piece of advice you'd give to any parents or kids that are listening?
Well, for sure, you know, science and technology is the going to be a growing field for many more years. So career path-wise, it's a great thing for getting them interested. But even if they're don't think you're interested in science, technology, et cetera, encourage them to try. Go try some event other than basketball and band and all the other activities that are out there.
Sure.
Go give one of these, some type of STEM thing a try. There's other aspects they'll be exposed to that'll be important in life. Okay. How do you manage the schedule? How do you complete the project on time? How do you deal with other people when they don't want to do what you want to do to build something? You know, as opposed to a lot of other events that things that are kids are involved with in schools, the STEM programs are probably the ones that are most likely with, here's your problem, how are you going to fix it, opposed to do laps, run faster, here's techniques that you use for, you know, I'm not a sports guy, so I can't tell you, but, you know, I used to wrestle. Okay, you know, here's how you do these takedowns, moves, et cetera. You know, there's not a lot of personal, how do you do it, struggling?
Yeah, it's not a playbook.
You discuss with the rest of the team, how do I do this part? You know, are we going to do this? So
it sounds like there's a lot of critical, problem solving, critical thinking, and you push them. It's a good way that you kind of that Socratic method, you know, ask the questions to lead them to get to their own.
Typically that's how we go. You know, it's, can we do this? I don't know. What do the rules say?
Go read up. Oh gosh. Well, yeah, I know you mentioned a couple of websites, so just for reference for those that are able to hear this while the season is still hot for 2018, but how can people read about this again? With the FIRST program?
I'll put out a couple. So our team is FIRST Robotics Team 1164. And the team number is correlated to when your team has entered the competition. So we've been around for a long time. There's teams named up to in the 7,000s now. But our team name is Project Neo, and our website is projectneo.net.
Okay.
And there's some photos of our past seasons there, a little bit of what we've done over the years. It's a kind of a site under construction always, but there's some useful stuff there.
Aren't they always?
And then firstinspires.org is the overall FIRST website.
And that's the global organization site that helps bring all this together to all the communities.
That's a global, you know, international competition there. And it's competitions from, and I mentioned we do the Lego League for 8 to 14 year olds, but there's Junior FLL, First Lego League, I'm sorry, that's even for the younger kids. And that's pretty much they get to build something and explain what they build. It's an expo, it's a show, not so much competition.
Got it.
So from early ages on all the way up through high school, there's a really well established robotics program there that's good for the students and for anybody else that would like to think mentoring a team, helping a team, even just going down and visiting them. You could do some searching on there. And you should be able to find some teams in the area. Another resource for locating teams is it's called BlueAlliance.org. I'm not sure of the dot on there. Search for Blue Alliance, you'll probably find it.
All right, okay. And that's another way to find teams.
Yeah, that's more about teams, their history, their location, their school. You can kind of work through that to find a team in your area.
Okay. All right. You know, having known you since middle school, I know you're close to retirement. You're going to stay with this? You're probably going to do more of it?
I'll stay with it. We'll see where it goes. I may take on a little bit more involvement on some other aspects of it. Mainly given work, I focus on the high school level competition. I support the Lego competition that we put on by serving as the judge advisor, but I'm not too involved with everything leading up to the event. And there's a ton of work that goes on just with that. There may be some increased involvement. Make sure I get out of the house some in retirement.
Right. Yeah. It'll be it'll be instead of beyond your day job, it'll be your my play job.
Yeah.
Just absolutely. Oh, Rick, this has been great. For those who've been with us all the way through this, thanks for hanging on, because let's hope this inspires some of your questions for your kids, or if any of you are able to invest your own middle school, high school curiosity areas, check out what type of programs FIRST brings to your school. It's respectful, it's honorable, and you heard Rick talk earlier about some of the success that these past players have had, and it's a well-rounded, holistic program. So it's been an honor hearing the details from you, Rick, on this.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Lonnie.
Appreciate it. Thank you. And you've been listening to Beyond My Day Job with Lonnie Miller, with tonight's special guest, Rick Pierce. Rick, thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Lonnie.
Right. Bye-bye.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.